What are you drinking?
That I got that s'mores, toasted s'moregasm.
Oh, okay.
I just mixed it with Diet Coke. It's pretty fucking, it's like, it makes the Diet Coke a little smoky and chocolatey and marshmallowy. I don't know.
Sounds good. Kind of like doing a smoky Dr. Pepper, so I'm using a smoky scotch, but it's a s'mores. What is it? Smoked s'more whiskey or something?
Yep. It's called s'moregasm.
Who makes it?
Revel Stoke.
Okay.
I'll have some more of what he's having. All right. Okay.
Yeah, I've been playing. Like, I ended up using the last of my gin the other night, so I'm doing the same thing I did last week, where I'm using the, what's the name of that? Margarita mix and the raspberry, but then I'm just using bourbon instead of the gin. And, like, I tried it the other night, and it's okay. Like, it's still good. But I think I went a little too, like, my ratio's off on this first glass that I made, so it, like, it doesn't taste the greatest. I'm debating if I want to try to mix another one in a second, or if I just want to switch over to straight whiskey for my second glass. Are you drinking anything, Mark?
I'm having a zero sugar Snapple peach tea. And did you know that 96% of cucumbers are just water? So if you like cucumbers, fuck you. You're just drinking water, you crazy bastards.
If we're starting, so it's like first, like, seriously, if you're listening to this, it, regardless of what the title says, seriously, if you're listening to this, spoilers, because spoilers. We said at the end of the last podcast, we said we were going to read volume one, and we fucked around and we found out. And
we found spoilers, out so good.
Spoilers, ready? Okay. Fucking Marco died. They killed Marco.
They killed my boy.
We're three friends that love to get a good buzz and talk about our favorite books and comic books. This is Inebriated Analysis.
Boy, you just dropped the hammer, didn't you? I didn't expect you to go for the throat.
Yeah, Mark's jumping straight to the last page. Have you read anything beyond the 54? Like, have you gone online and looked for any of the episodes in the next volume?
So, yes. I was so desperate for this that I got onto Hoopla and I was like, okay, I'm going to get volume 10. And volume 10, like, I was out of credits, like we talked about. And so I went and bought a digital copy of at like 10 o'clock at night for Comixology so I could read volume 10. So I read volume 10, and volume 11 comes out November 15th. So,
okay. So I will say, like, I only read through the first compendium. So the last thing that I saw is Marco dying. And so that's as far as we're going to discuss today, because I'm really enjoying the story. I absolutely love it.
Oh my God, it's so good. Oh my God, it's so good. Okay.
Well, hang on. Let's introduce it. If you're just joining us and you didn't catch last week's episode or the last episode, we're talking about Saga, written by
Brian K. Vaughan. And penned by last name Staples, Fiona Staples.
Fiona Staples. It is a blend of science fiction and fantasy. It is dark. It is wholesome. It is sexy. It is funny. It is sad. You will get the full range of emotion reading this story.
It's the first three episodes or first three seasons of Game of Thrones, the first three episodes of Star Wars, and then like just a like fucking Full House a little bit. Like, it's amazing.
Do not use this as your bedtime reading book. There are parts of this book that if that is what you read right before bed, you're going to be pissed off. You're going to be sad, or you're just going to want to push through and continue reading, in which case you're going to have to go through all those motions again before you end up going to bed. So
I was sweaty. My armpits stank after reading this.
What the fuck were you sweating? Were you watching?
It was
Cops?
Intense, man. It was intense.
Cops doesn't come on until 4. Oh my God. It was so good.
Dude, it has, like, the character development is great. We can go into individual characters at some point, but has great character development. It brings in characters that, you know, are going to be or even stay as being, you know, the bad guys, but you get to see them as a person and how they develop. And there's people that die after they've gone and gotten you attached to them.
There's a goddamn seal that arms himself like Rambo. There's a tiny seal man whose name is Gus, who or Goose, because it's an umlaut. And
somewhere
he's got,
in between,
like, he shows up with a fucking axe and like a shotgun and like a bandit, and he's just smiling, and he's just the best little fucking boy. Oh, I love him.
Yeah, he's like, I raided the arms room in case you guys, in case we ran into something. But yeah, dude, like the things that hit me so hard is like the when I think the first big one that I was like, no fucking way, was Isabel. Yeah. Like, she's a ghost. She can't die. Oh no, ghosts can die again.
That's crazy that's the first one. The first one that hit me actually was the Wraith, the Spectre, the Spider Chick.
Oh, Stalk. Stalk.
Sorry, yeah. I had the Will's girlfriend.
I hadn't got attached to her yet. Like, she was just another bad guy at that point. Like, I feel like she was the first death, and it was shocking because it was like it's like they were building her up for something. But it's like, hey, we're gonna build her up, and you know, we're gonna take her out before she can become, you know, hit her stride in the series. And I mean, you still get to see her later on, you know, in the form of hallucinations. Yeah, I wasn't as attached to her.
I wasn't necessarily attached to her. I kind of was like attached to Will, because like I thought Will was going to be like, you know, oh, this is our bad guy that's going to turn good. I didn't think it would be fucking Robot the Fourth. I thought it would be Will's going to be like, oh, he's going to be a bounty hunter, but then he turns out to be a good guy. Like he's Han Solo, or he's Boba Fett, or he's fucking the Mountain or whatever. He's fucking crazy, and he gets turned.
Yeah,
never mind. Yeah.
Crazy, but it does have a conscience, at least. Like, he does have some kind of moral code.
Oh my god, can we talk about the fact that we finally read a book where, like, they're like, hey, pedophilia, and then and they just fucking kill someone for pedophilia? Like, it took some, took them a little bit, a few episodes, a few issues rather, but like, still, like, fuck pedophilia. Yay.
Right. Well, you know what's going to happen, though. Like it was like he was trying to take a stand from the start and was kind of like in a position where he couldn't, you know, but like he didn't give up. He's like, no, this is fucked up. We're going to fix this. Inclusionary was another word I was going to use to describe this book. I told Jody, which is my wife, for the listeners, I told her, like, you have to read this book. Like, there's comics that you want me to read, and I've read them and I've enjoyed them. But like, I haven't pushed any on you really hardcore. There's some I would like you to read, but I haven't really pushed them. I was like, you need to read this.
This feels like from like a cultural zeitgeist, or like a comic nerd zeitgeist. This feels like the Sandman of like younger millennials than I, or like older Gen Z. And the reason I say that is because I've heard tale that Sandman was something that, like, if you liked comic books when Sandman came out, you gave this to your girlfriend, be like, here, this is what comics are like. And then she stole your copy of Sandman and then went and fucked off with someone else because you were a douchebag, but you showed her Sandman, and Sandman is how she got into like the nerd culture of like the early 90s, late 80s. I feel like Saga is that for this generation.
Inclusionary.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Well, yeah, because there is a main character in this story that almost anyone can identify with, to, you know, in some way, you know, like, I mean, they're all aliens to us, you know, like there's no just straight up humans in here. So like, you know, there's a civil war going on that is racially motivated. There's, you know, there's homophobia in here, in one particular, you know, world. And there's, you know, the people who are obviously gay living on this, you know, homophobic world or within this homophobic culture. There's a trans person there, you know, like there's interracial shit going on. There's all kinds of stuff.
But it doesn't come across preachy at any point. It's all very like, it feels very like part of the story. It didn't feel like, oh, we need to shoehorn in a trans character here. Like everything just worked with the story. It was really well written.
Right.
Well, they even do such a good job of like using the idea, the main character, rather the third main character, when she actually becomes old enough to be a main character, Hazel, they use what being trans is to express like how this character feels about being biracial. Like there's a scene where she asked if she could see the trans character's penis. And she's like, no, that's not an appropriate thing to ask a trans person. The reason that this like 8-year-old girl at the time wants to see her penis, she doesn't want to see it in a sexual way. She wants to understand what it's like for someone who didn't know what their body was and didn't like the way their body was and changed their body, because she has horns from her dad in magic, and she has wings from her mother, and she genuinely thought at that moment that she was going to grow a penis because she had something from her mother and her father, and she didn't have a penis yet, and so she thought she was going to get a penis, and she was unsure of how she was going to live in the world as this unique hybrid creature. Fucking beautiful. I was before Shane was like, hey, maybe we should tell people what the fuck this book was about. What I was going to go off on was this started in 2014, and they took a hiatus in 2018 for 4 fucking years. I'm sorry to all the fans of Saga out there who had to go 4 years with Marco being dead and then not get new Saga shit until middle of a pandemic.
I knew there was a gap there, but for some reason I thought that the next volume came out right afterwards, but that volume was just now getting printed in graphic novel format. Yeah, that would suck to have to wait 4 years after that cliffhanger.
There's no fuck. I mean, clearly I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait for the fucking what happened because I had to.
If you haven't read it yet, like the very last panel of the compendium is Marco with a big ass hole in his chest. That's just how it ends.
After he doesn't kill the Will, he has the shield. He's going to fucking Captain America right onto this fucking guy's head. And he doesn't. He's like, I'm not going to do it anymore because violence begets violence. And it's just an endless circle. And then he gets fucking stabbed in the chest. And what I hate is I don't trust Brian K. Vaughan to bring Marco back. I want him to bring Marco back. I don't. But I want him to bring Marco back because he's such a good dad and I love him so much. Oh, my God. I'm going to cry. But I don't think he's going to bring him back, despite the fact that there's fucking magic all over this place and magic and also science. And they even at one point, Marco's trying to in a moment of panic and high action, Marco's trying to clarify to his wife that actually magic is just science, I think is where he's going to go. And then his super hot, badass fucking wife is just shut the fuck up. We're being shot at or whatever the fuck was going on in the scene.
If you're reading this as an older person, there are little bits of philosophy and kind of truth bombs dropped throughout this thing. And some of them could be kind of depressing as an older person. I did what I did a while back. I remember, there's a comic that I screenshotted everything that I found interesting. And I kind of did that on this one too. And one of them was, what was the dad's name's Barr? B-A-R-R. He said, his father once told me that your first grandchild is nature's reminder that your warranty is about to run out. And he died less than a year after Marco was born. And I'm like, oh, damn. Well, my dad just had his first grandchild born a few years ago, and it's like, damn, that's a dark way to think about it. But
he died about a year after Hazel was born, not Marco.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, that's another fucking Barr. I was attached to Barr.
Yeah.
And he fucking dies. Yeah.
Right away. I feel like they did a better job. They gave you time to make a connection to him before he died. Whereas the Stalk, I felt like they didn't give you a lot of opportunity to make a connection with that character.
I was connected. And again, weird hot spider way.
Really? Is this graphic novel awakening something in TJ where he's like, oh, apparently I'm a furry.
It awoken something to me. There are some sexy scenes in this book.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, this fucking. What, but they're sexy, but they're not sexy necessarily for the purpose of being sexy. Like, they all feel like they have a point. Like, there's the one flashback where it's like it's essentially showing the conception of Hazel.
And is that the one where she's holding on to his horns?
Probably. And
that I'm looking at that one right now.
Okay, so you're screenshotting things for more than don't. I guess it's an audio part. I don't remember. That's a bad picture. Anyway. All I remember is that it's the post-coital conversation, and she's like, wait a minute, did you come inside me? And he was like, yeah, you told me to. And she's like, don't listen to me when I'm in the middle of having an orgasm. That you can't trust that bitch.
Yeah, that was sexy Alana. She's a crazy person. Sexy Alana is obsessed with her nipples and uses the word dick unironically. She's not to be trusted.
But those are conversations. It's very sexy, but also that's a conversation that I've had before. In a vague sense. So don't trust me when I say things when that's happening. You can't hold me to that, Your Honor.
I also like how open they are. Because and the next panel, she's like, I came like a dump truck, Marco. Yeah. I don't know. I find it that's how I am. Like, I am very open about what I like sexually, and I feel like some people aren't. I'm like, man, just let it out. Like, talk about it. Like, there's so many like cultural taboos that shouldn't be there. Like, if people could just walk around, I'm like, oh yeah, I fucked last night and I came like a dump truck. Like, that should be okay in normal conversation.
Like, what you consider normal conversation, but
everything they throw it, if it's the sex or the characters, I think Mark was trying to say everything seems to be part of the story. And also, like, even though the sex was really sexy, it was also really, it felt more real than a lot of other sensationalized sex scenes. Everything felt kind of down to earth, which is kind of weird to say about this story, but. Do you know what I mean?
No, absolutely.
It felt real. Like, it didn't feel like, hey, we're going to throw in the sex scene for the male gaze. No, it's like, this is what two people that are in the height of passion are going to do. And you're just getting a glimpse behind the curtain, you know, or you're getting a glimpse into the bedroom.
That being said, there was a sex scene for the male gaze between the two reporters where they're just having a full ass, like, actual conversation while having sex.
About their work.
About work.
The most unerotic conversation. Like, man.
Ah, that was hard, too, when that guy died.
The reporter. The door that died.
Yeah, that was hard. That whole fucking last book, that last book where they killed everybody just pissed me off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was mad. Every time somebody died, I was like, no, what the fuck are you doing? They killed the fucking dog.
Yeah.
That pissed me off. Like, how are you going to kill Sweet Boy?
Wait, when they killed the dog? When did they kill the dog?
That fucking mole lady kidnapped Will.
Okay.
She killed the dog.
I thought that was in the volume 10 that I read, or the new volume.
No. I don't think it was in the very last volume, but it was the next to last or the beginning.
That's right,
because
he was
volume.
On her fucking ship.
Yeah, he wrote that note that said, "You skinned my dog," or "I killed your boyfriend. You skinned my dog. We're even."
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Okay. I see that now because she carried him around like a slave. I don't know. I know where the breaking point in my brain is of the volume that I read that you guys have. So, okay. We're good. Yeah. Fuck that anteater bitch. Just in general.
Like, yeah.
That reminds. So this is why I think this is why I compared to Game of Thrones, because obviously gratuitous sex, but nothing seems wasted. And I think in the first three seasons of Game of Thrones, it didn't feel like there was any wasted scene. Everything had a purpose. So, you know, the Will shows up and he kills a bunch of madams and bodyguards at this like sex planet, saves this girl from sex slavery and human trafficking, or, you know, space people trafficking, and he kills a trio of brothers. And then how many fucking issues later, like 40 issues later, one of their girlfriends comes back, and because of her actions, Marco dies.
Yeah, that's some like Neil Gaiman Sandman bullshit, bringing something back at the end that happened at the beginning. Because the thing is, as soon as she took him captive, like even after she said her name, like I was laying there, like I stopped reading and sat there for 5-10 minutes and just racked my brain, like, who could this be? Like, who did he kill that left the significant other behind, or left somebody behind that would be coming after him? And I couldn't think of anybody. And then as soon as she took her mask off and it was a mole, I'm like, oh, that fucker, like, that wasn't even a consequential character that he killed. That was, we saw that character for two panels. But going to the girl that he freed from the sex slavery, or slave girl, as she starts off and later on becomes Sophie, that was one of the first, like, I know there were some wholesome moments before this, but the first one that just like, oh, dude, that's fucking awesome, is when they're on the planet, this one planet, and she's talking about how she's a dirty, and, you know, she's dirty on the inside because of all the stuff she had to do.
Yes.
And lying cat just lying, like, basically, you're not dirty for what you had to do. You know, like, that's not true. Like, I'm not a crier. Nothing about this book ever elicited, like, emotions that would make me want to cry. But that tugged at the heartstrings pretty good right there.
Well, and so so I could be reading too much into this, because that's the point of the podcast. But there is a scene later where someone is being tortured, and they have Lion Cat there, and they make one, either the Will or Gwendolyn, someone mentions that Lion Cat can't actually detect whether or not someone is lying. Lion Cat can detect whether or not someone believes the truth, like believes what they're saying is true. That, like, the Lion Cat is more like a lie detector in that way. But I I want to say that because Lion Cat is sentient, that he probably said that in the context of the situation so that she thought that what she was saying was a lie to like the general populace as opposed to like what she believed. Because if she truly believed that what she was saying was a lie, he would call her a liar. And then that kind of undercuts the moment. But I think that what Lion Cat was doing there was just like, no, like that, you know me as a thing that can detect whether or not lies happen, and you are lying right now.
I took it to mean that like she legitimately felt that way. And yeah. And he was saying it's a lie that you feel that way because that's not true. Like you're not dirty. Yeah. You're not worthless.
That's what I was saying is that like they go back and they say that Lion Cat doesn't actually detect lies because if someone believes what they're saying, then he won't detect it. And that I think Lion Cat just said that out like to reassure her.
So, I wonder if these like even guys read a lot of therapy books or something. It feels like I was going through some kind of group therapy when I was reading this.
I mean, Alana is a fucking drug addict, and everybody has PTSD to some degree. There's like definitely some influences. I don't know how old Brian K. Vaughan is, but there's definitely some like millennial Gen Z or a Gen X. Like my parents used to beat the shit out of me when I did something wrong, which is what Marco's parents did. And they always told me that it was for my, you know, it hurts us more than it hurts you, and it's to make you better and all that shit. And he won't do that to his kids. There's definitely a lot of that permeated through this of like Brian and probably even Fiona to some degree to work through some of the issues that they have.
Yeah. So it seems like they've been through a lot as writers, or at least been exposed to a lot. And they seem to speak to it with a certain amount of knowledge and intellect of somebody who cares and has looked into these things.
Well, and the fact that they have like, I mean, I would agree to that. They probably also have some sort of scholarly background to like revolutions or historical movements, because the novelist wrote this fucking novel, that this trash romance novel with like a secret revolutionary message in it. And it's now permeating into like society, and actually a revolution is developing around it.
When he was telling the robot guy that it was just a trash novel that he was going to throw away, the whole time I was thinking, yeah, I agree with that. Like, none of this seemed very compelling. I thought maybe she was just reading it all into it, but they kind of debunked that later in the story. But I totally bought it, what he was saying.
Yeah, it's almost like like they do little Family Guy bits where, yeah, like he's trying to tell Prince Robot the Fourth, like, no, this is just, I was just paying him, a fucking ex-wife is a bitch. And then like in the next panel, it's him like gushing over the fact that Alana got his message. He's like, oh my God, I can't believe you got it. That's amazing. You're so, let's talk to the kid. Ah. And then they pan down and like everyone's hiding in the fucking basement from Prince Robot. It's fucking good.
And then they ripped fucking Prince Robot's head off.
Yeah. After he's like kind of not a shitty, I mean, he's still pretty fucking shitty. Like he's still not a great person. And oh my God. So they're the royal family has like CRT TVs that are in color, and then the commoners are black and white, and then the king is just a giant fucking plasma TV. Like, what?
Yeah.
Do you get that plasma TV when you become the king? How does that work?
Yeah, I was like the way that, like the details that they put in this, like, you know, you have the different kind of castes within, you know, each side of the war, but even those castes have castes within them. Like the robots are one particular faction, but even they have this hierarchy of the black and whites and the royals. And I don't know, it makes me want to like go through again, even if I don't read it, if I just going through and even looking at pictures and trying looking at details I may have missed the first time through. Because like I noticed in the, I guess, trigger warning for miscarriages, the main
character. That's not how trigger warnings work.
Okay, well,
trigger warning for the thing that's going to trigger you right now. But yes, I appreciate
the main character ends up, there's an accident and their baby dies, and they have to go have the fetus removed. And later on, when it cuts to a scene where she no longer has a belly and is healed, like they drew in the extra skin at the bottom of her belly. Like,
yes.
Like,
oh my
like,
God, that was so fucking awesome.
So like the fact that you are going to put that much detail into this, and I mean, it's very subtle, and so I'm sure some people could read this and never notice it, but like it stood out to me. I'm like, oh, dude,
that's
like
what a woman's fucking body looks like.
Yeah. she still has the line down her belly that you have for a while after pregnancy. She has the little pouch of extra skin below her belly button, like a woman tends to have. And yeah, and like, it's like, if they're going to put that much detail into somebody's drawings, like what other little details did I miss along the way?
I like all the different things that show up on the robot's face. I like that. That's how they.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Express like emotions.
Yeah, it's like his subconscious shows up on the screen.
But yeah, also sometimes some weird shit shows up that's not appropriate, and then like the kids are just watching TV, but it's him dreaming about like all these weird sexual positions and stuff.
Because that's totally what you would do if you're a kid. I remember like trying to watch Showtime late at night, you know, when I'm not supposed to be.
Yeah, but you don't need to watch Showtime when you can just watch an actual fucking person sleeping and having weird sex dreams.
Yeah, that was great. That's like such great attention to detail in that, like to think of those things. So creative. This book is so creative.
And then that little muskrat kid got to die because its mom didn't want to leave the planet.
But that wasn't their fault. Like, she was right. The fucking coalition or whatever shot that comet into the giant time baby or whatever the fuck that was. The time suck, which was created by an event of one of the main characters early on. So like she was right. And I fucking love that she was right. And, you know, the war destroyed what this person believed, essentially. I also like the underpinning that it seems as though the war is more nefarious than we previously thought.
Oh yeah, like they're the two sides are perpetuating the war, like they're colluding with each other to keep the war ongoing.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like anything that could be happening in real life.
No, nobody would do anything like that. It even touches into the religion aspect. Like the stuff that really stuck out to me is like, as that kid's dying, you know, it's like, please God, I believe.
Oh my God, yes.
Doesn't matter if you believe or not, you're dying, you know. There's more to it than that, but like just the whole, like, you have faith, but like it's still pretty, you know, your situation is still very hopeless despite what you believe right now. But, you know, then going back into the book a little bit, the teacher that tells, you know, anyone who thinks one book has all the answers hasn't read enough books. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't much longer after that, you know, like you'll never understand the way the world really works until you surround yourself with people from all sorts of weird backgrounds, you know, like definitely, you know, we were all definitely raised in a part of the country where it's like, oh, you know, there's one way that, you know, there's one right way. That's it. You know, and, you know, I think we get older and, you know, branch out, you know, we travel the world or even travel parts of the United States or just meet people that aren't from the social circles we were in, you know, as we were growing up, you know, how our worldview changes, you know, as you meet all those different people.
Dear baby Jesus, six pounds, eight ounce
baby Jesus. This is the only time you will hear me be pro-capitalist. I want them to Star Wars the fuck out of Saga. I want the extra shit. I want to know all about the Robot Kingdom. I want them to have a 10-episode show that's like just fucking bureaucracy and red tape. I want all of it. I want to know the history of the war. I want to see magic and fucking lasers everywhere.
This would make a outstanding cartoon series.
It will never happen.
You're right, it won't, but like this, it holds up very well. Like you could make a TV show that would last seasons, you know, like you could get 5 or 6 years out of this, you know, easy. You're right, it won't happen.
Specifically,
they could make a TV show out of this
because Brian K. Vaughan said specifically he designed Saga to not be adaptable. Which, of course, they can make anything and do it anything if you throw enough money at it. But like he specifically doesn't want it to be adapted.
I think the key for it to being adapted, it would have to be adapted in a cartoon format. Like you're not going to do live action with it.
Why
like,
not?
I don't want to see this as live action. I want to see this as like a Saturday morning cartoon that goes on for, you know, 5 to 10 seasons. You know, like a long ass, you know, like some of these animes out there. You know, you get, what is it like?
Definitely not Saturday morning cartoon, by the way.
Like, no.
Saturday late night cartoon.
Yeah, what's like? There's an anime out there.
Naruto's been on for
Naruto. It's got like a couple thousand episodes.
One
out
Piece.
There.
I mean, The Simpsons has been going for like 38 years or whatever.
Yeah, so I think you could do this
when you're looking at a comic book. You're literally got visual panels. I mean, the book's made to be adapted to some kind of screen format. Like it's.
Well, I know. I'm just saying, like it could be easily done. And yet that's not what Brian K. Vaughan wants. Like he's already done several adapted things. Like Brian K. Vaughan is the one who did Why the Last Man, which had like a season and a half on Hulu, I think, or FX. He's also done adaptation of the Stephen King novel Under the Dome. So he has adapted somebody else's work. As of right now, he seems pretty anti wanting. He did Ex Machina as well. Did that get adapted to something?
I don't know. I know he wrote a few episodes of Lost.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't like a lot of his other books that he had written. I've heard of Ex Machina, but I don't know anything about it. Like I don't know anything about Why the Last Man. Like I couldn't have told you anything about anything that he's written. But you know, I recognize Under the Dome because I listened to the audiobook for Under the Dome. It is kind of a fucked up, book, which I guess a lot of Stephen King's books are. I've just read some, like, the more, fantasy aspects of his works that, like, while they are kind of fucked up, I don't know, this one was just weird. But yeah, I didn't recognize anything that he had done before.
It does make me want to read more of his stuff.
So in line with all of the gushing that we did over, what did we just read? Hunger Games. Is there anything you didn't like about this other than just like the fact that it is over and we have to wait to get more?
If anything, like the things I didn't like were just that I just didn't like things that people did, but like I can't criticize the writers. It's almost like they're real people, and it's almost like I'm just mad at the characters he created, but I can't fault him for his creative choices. I was really mad at Alana and what's his face when they got mad at the robot for getting high when both of them did the exact same thing and fucked everything up. Like I understand being mad in the moment and like saying, hey, you're risking our children's lives and you did a lot of fucked up things. But like later when everything's calmed down, they're like, get out of our lives. Get off your fucking high horse. You guys both fucked up. So that kind of made me mad. I was mad at the grandma for like staying in prison. I thought that was weird. I wouldn't stay in prison if my grandbaby was awesome,
I totally understand your point. Because you can rationalize all those decisions, right? Like,
yeah.
Yes, we as parents have made the mistake that you as a robot has made. However, you as a robot put our children in danger. And also, our decisions put our children in danger, but we can make sure that you, a robot, are not around our child. We're not going to do that to ourselves. And the same is true for the mother, like, or the grandmother. She made the decision to stay in prison, as we believe, so that she is not a burden on her family. And that makes sense because she started walking with, like, a cane there for a while before they got busted. So all the decisions do make sense. You're right. The reason you don't hate Brian K. Vaughan or you don't hate Saga, you hate the fact that his characters are real characters and you hate the decisions the characters are making. And
I took
fucking character development.
Yeah, it is.
I took her decision to stay in prison almost like, hey, I'm reaching the people here.
Oh, yeah.
Almost like a missionary kind of thing. Like, it's like, hey, we're reaching people here. We might be able to do something with this. Yeah, we're in prison now, but like as people get out of prison, if we can get converts to the cause, maybe we can spread this message of, we can love each other, we can fuck each other instead of killing each other.
That is absolutely what is happening.
I did like that concept of the opposite of war is fucking, not peace. which I mean, it's like I'm anti-war, and I think about sex all the time. So I don't think about peace all the time, but I do think about sex all the time. So I could see that.
Yeah, I do like those kind of little philosophical, like you. I think you said little philosophical bombs that were just kind of peppered throughout. There's a lot of nice thoughts, deep thoughts.
And Jack Handy's deep thoughts, second podcast in a row.
And it's just like, so no, I don't think there's anything. There's things that I'm not happy about. Like I didn't like the fact that they killed Isabel. I didn't like the fact that they killed a lot of the people that they did kill, you know, because like I like those characters. But I think that that's a I think a good, if an author can make you feel emotions as you read their work, then they are doing an excellent job as an author. And I don't mean like if you like if all you feel is anger while you're reading their work, okay, maybe not so much. Like if all you but if they can make you happy one minute and then sad the next and then angry the next, you know, that's a sign of a good author that can definitely play to your emotions. You know, I laughed out loud several times while I was reading this. When the zombies came out saying they want to eat your taints, like I laughed. Yeah. Like I read that and just like started laughing and I'm like, that has to be an illusion, you know, and it was, but like, it was just like that. This is too ridiculous for it to be a real threat. And it was just funny. And that happened more than once. You know, like I don't remember all the places that I laughed out loud, but I definitely laughed out loud more than once.
If I had like an actual criticism, and I don't know how strong this is like an actual criticism, but my like biggest gut shot or like cheap shot they took on me in this book is they set that whole asteroid thing up to be, they kind of like, she prefaced it in her diary that it was like one of the worst times in her life. And so like after that was over, I wasn't expecting the end of the book where everyone fucking dies. Like, wouldn't that be the worst fucking day of your life? You know, not just the day when Isabel dies and your little furry friend. How about when your dad and your best friend's dad and that reporter, everybody's dying around you? That would be the worst day of my life.
I wonder, like, with this is what I, the one thing I do not like necessarily is the idea of Hazel being the narrator from the future.
Yeah.
Because I don't know where in Hazel's life, and hopefully we'll find out at the 100, at the end of the 108 issues or whatever, or volumes issues, whatever it is. But yeah. Like that's a very valid fucking point. Like, does that mean her dad and everybody comes back to life for some reason? Or because like there's a lot of bad shit that happens. And like, yeah, no, it was an otter, man. And Isabel dying was fucking tragic, but like it was a cute little otter and cute little otter people that they spent like maybe 3 months with, 6 months, maybe. It just, but also maybe it's Hazel is like a 19-year-old rebel freedom fighter and she's still speaking in teenage hyperbole. We don't fucking know. So I will say I don't like that as much. I do like that she's kind of cheeky. It does beg the question of like, of the, how do you know the parts that you weren't there for? Did everyone that was in this story tell Hazel, or did she find out everything that happened, or is she just not the narrator for the parts where like the bad guys are talking?
Yeah, I do trust them. Like, I agree. Like, when I found out she was narrating, I was like, this is going to get squishy. I don't know what they're going to do with this. It could be kind of nebulous. And but I, so far they've made me trust them because they've grown her up some. Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is like when you watch some TV shows and they get stuck in the same kind of melodramatic loop and no one ever gets older, no one ever gets out of high school. And you're like, geez, they've been in, if you're watching this TV show, they've been in high school for like 8 fucking years. You know, they never progress anything. But this this comic does a good job of bringing things forward in time. You know, they don't get stuck in one place, and I appreciate that about the writers. I'm hoping they do bridge that gap and you get up to the current day that she's narrating. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah
Well, and the thing, like, they've, you know, she's hinted a couple times, like, and I don't know if it's foreshadowing or not, but they talk about, you know, she says something along the lines of others died so that some of us can grow old. So like it gives me the impression that like she's telling the story as an old woman. Like, this is her memoir kind of thing. Like, hey, I'm going to tell my grandkids a story about how I got where I am. It's either that or like she's laying somewhere dying and we're
seeing the flashback of her life. As soon as you started saying that, I was like, Brian K. Vaughan is going to kill this motherfucker. And this is going to be her like life's diary, like being recorded by Squire or some shit. And it's just going to fucking break my heart.
Yeah.
They're just going to burn it all to the ground so nobody can ever like continue it or adapt it or anything.
Dude, the panels where she was magically making an illusion of her dead son and what he would have been while they're on the way to get rid of the fetus.
God.
Dude, that was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yes. And like, he was sad. The fact that he was sad that he may not exist. But then like, there was also, so this is Heinlein, I know you're listening to us. And this is how, as an author, you actually put a bit of yourself in your work. And not making self-congratulatory and
flagellating, where he says, like, but like, if I'm just an idea, to like, do ideas die? And she says something like, you know, ideas don't die as long as there's someone there to like write a story about it, or whatever the fuck she says. It was 100% just like Brian. We get to call him Brian now because we're on a first name basis. It was 100% Brian just being like, this is what writers do. This is how writers tell their story and live on. Oh, God, it was so fucking good. Also, I like the fact that the abortionist was a she bitch, like a bitch wolf. And she was just letting it all hang out. And it wasn't sexy. Yeah. It was just like, that's exactly what it would be. Like, she was a werewolf, or, you know, an anthropomorphized wolf, and she was female, and she had a bunch of kids, so she'd have a bunch of titties, and like, she has no reason to cover that up. So yeah. It was just, it wasn't sexy. That was just exact that in a world where a wolf is standing on two legs and performing abortions on a cowboy planet, that's what exactly it would look like.
And like, as much as they tried to paint her as a monster, like, she still had a moral compass. Like she wasn't just a monster. Like, she was a person who was willing to, like, that whole planet was very analogous as to what's going on in the world today. Like, you know, like, there's people today where if a woman needs to get an abortion, regardless of her reason, you know, reason doesn't matter, yes. But regardless of her reason, there are some states where it would be illegal and she would have to travel somewhere else to do that. And here at this, and like, this is an entire planet where that's the case. Like, if somebody wants an abortion, they have to go to this planet to get it done. And even then, like, there's certain places where they're still not going to do it. You know, if you're too far along, or what, you know, if you're the wrong race, you know, whatever. So now you have to go to the back alley version, but that back alley person is still like helping folks, you know, they're like, yeah, that elephant there, they found out their kid was going to have a very short, very painful life because of a birth defect, and no one else would do this. So I did it because it needed to be done. I found the dichotomy interesting of how they make her look kind, especially like when you meet this doctor, she's covered in blood. She doesn't look friendly. She looks like a monster. It's in this kind of like ominous, you know, scary movie house. And it was
like the scariest little whorehouse in Texas. Very much.
Yeah. And then you get in there and it's like, oh yeah, those are my kids, but I just fed them and they're asleep. They're going to sleep. So you don't need to worry about waking them up. And yeah, here's another patient, and, you know, let's value their privacy and close the curtains. You know, like, this person that, you know, for all the appearances they made out to be a monster, is someone who actually cares about, you know, people.
I thought for sure some shit was going to go down, but it never did. I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's that.
Like, they were going to, like, she was going to actually, like, take the aborted fetus and, like, use it to fuel her own magic or some shit.
Yeah, I thought that's exactly what I thought she was going to, like, I thought the little wolf kids were going to wake up and start wreaking havoc, you know, like, they didn't give a fuck about everyone's lives, so they were going to try to eat her little girl. I thought something was going to happen. But, I mean, I'm glad it didn't, kind of, just speak to what Shane was talking about, you know, appearances aren't everything, so.
I definitely think that the reason that she comes off as harsh as she does and bluntly is because she is performing abortions on a planet of abortions, but she's doing the work that nobody else will. And so she's not supported. And so, you know, she has to be a business person about it because she's very chaotic neutral, where she has to look out for her kids and she has to be able to fund whatever it is, you know, clinic or whatever you want to call it that she has. And she has to do it as like grittily as possible because nobody else is helping her out.
I'm curious to see what her favor is going to be, because, you know, if they brought in some random character's girlfriend to avenge him, a character that you see in three panels and has no real significance of the story, something like that, where she says, you'll just owe me a favor. You know, that's going to get brought back up at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just recently, like, I've heard the term before, but I just recently learned what Chekhov's gun means. So,
are you? We've said it so many times on this podcast. Are you serious?
I smile and nod a lot, man.
I'm sorry. For those of you who don't know, Chekhov's gun is based off of a Russian playwright, and the idea is the principle of, if there is a gun in the first act, it will be shot in the third act. It is foreshadowing. But it is foreshadowing that is done in a way that is not like, you have to kind of pay attention and maybe you catch it on the second pass. I assume Chekhov's actually had many guns in his plays. I don't know the actual origin of it, but that's the idea. It's essentially foreshadowing, but like a specific item that, just like there's a MacGuffin, which is the item that everybody goes after everything is just a MacGuffin. Chekhov's gun is a specific thing or person that will then come back, as opposed to just general foreshadowing of like spooky clouds or whatever.
Yeah, but the thing, like, Chekhov probably didn't even have a gun. He had a phaser, and you know, it's
no, it's
in,
different.
In a world where guns are highly regulated,
you're being racist to Russian people in the future.
I don't mean racist. I just make a Star Wars joke or Star Trek joke.
Oh, you just pissed off two entire fandoms now. You said Star Wars instead of Star Trek, even though you corrected yourself. People are already actually you from like
that's fine. They can actually
people have pushed their glasses through their forehead trying
they
to correct you.
Actually me because my wife actuallys me all the time because I say Star Trek more often than I do say Star Trek.
You're gonna go watch that Star Trek. You're gonna go watch Picard run around.
Yeah, I'm like, yes, I'm going to watch Star Trek. And she's like, no, Star Trek. I'm like, you don't even watch the show. Like, you don't even like the show. How are you actually me about it?
Because she understands how fucking letters work. She understands the difference between an E and an A.
Yeah, well, I've been taking German on Duolingo, and the difference between an I and an E, one of them is E. The other one is E.
Well, we're not German, Shane.
I've got a high percentage of German in me. So,
well, get off of him. We're talking about Saga right now. Anyway, heyo, sex jokes. I
get off on Saga, man. There's some sexy parts in here.
That's fine.
She fucking squirts. That's awesome.
It is, but also, I do think
like,
I like
grab those horns and squirt all over my face. Like that is.
I do like that the art isn't necessarily super provocative.
Yes. You know,
like there are some shots that are like detailed, but for the most part, like when the trans woman is in the shower and like that's when you find out she's trans, she's just showering.
That surprised me. Like I thought she was looking for her mom or her I thought she was looking for her grandma. And for a second I thought that was her grandma. I'm like, hey, her grandma's got a wiener.
but what I was getting at was that the penis, it was a nice blend of like Goku as a child penis or Gohan as a child penis and like the modern drawing and design sensibilities where like it was not detailed. If you weren't looking closely at it, it was just like a smaller you inside of a bigger you. But
yeah, until you get to the robot penis, which was pretty detailed.
The robot penis looked shit.
It looked like something off of the Bad Dragon website.
Right? Yeah, that was a baney bastard.
Oh my god. Were those USB-C cables running through that? Is that what those were?
Oh, jeez.
Maybe he's liquid cooled and it's the cooling system.
His fucking gun hand. What the shit is that about? That's so dope. It just turns into like a teacup sometimes.
It can change into anything.
He's
like
fluid.
He's like, I've always seen myself as fluid, which is why he could work with the transverse and like he can just give himself a vagina if he wants to.
I don't know that that's necessarily what he did. He made like, I guess it could be either way. Like, because when they were having sex, like it could be that like she's fucking him the conventional way or that like he just turns. But at that point, like, why would you make the hole there? You could put the hole anywhere.
Either he changed himself from an Audi to an Innie, or they were just like rubbing their junk against each other, which seems uncomfortable to me because they were definitely
anal
a missionary.
Sex. Or anal sex.
I don't know. Shame. It didn't. It the angle didn't look right.
I'm sorry. Oh, what angle have you been having anal sex?
They were
sex
in missionary.
Like, yeah, but like
they were in the missionary position. Like I know you can do anal sex that way, but like the hips got to be rolled forward more. Like it just didn't.
One
look
of them
like
is a robot man. One of them is like this badass warrior woman. So like, there's nothing to say that she couldn't just pick him up by like his chest hair, lift him up into whatever position she wants him to be in because she's clearly on top.
Yeah. You're right. Like, yeah, I'm just saying, like,
why
from
am I getting
my
so defensive?
I don't know because I don't think like either of us has to be right or wrong on this. I just think from my perspective of reading it, it didn't look as if they were in a good position for anal. So I've seen
well
like
from my point of view, the Jedi are evil. So
but he also like strictly said, I've always seen myself as fluid and made all his fingers turn into one. So like, it's just implying that, oh, you've got an Audi. Let me give myself an Innie and let's rock, you know?
Sure. So, just because he's fluid in that way doesn't mean that he can't like,
but,
I don't know.
But
maybe
the nice thing about
maybe
it,
he wants to be fucked in the anus.
Maybe. And
he
that's
has
fine.
An anus. You see him taking a shit reading the book
right,
in one of the early issues. So.
Right. And I would, you know, he's male, so I'd assume he has a prostate. So, you know, yeah, man, milk it.
Yeah, the science is there. The science is there.
Science.
Oh, my God. What is this podcast?
It's funny because the other night, me and
TJ, get us on the rails.
I work with two guys on this job that I'm on. There's two guys from Canada. And I was talking to him about Letterkenny the other day because one of them hadn't heard about Letterkenny. I'm like, dude, it's a Canadian show. Like, how have you not heard about Letterkenny? It was fucking hilarious. And I had to tell him about the scene where Squirrely Dan asks his buddies, like, have you guys ever been with a girl that wanted to put her finger up your butthole? And that just seemed kind of on topic to this conversation.
Yeah, that was funny.
I've never had a girl put her finger up my butthole, so I can't speak on it. But
so back to the art.
Back to the art.
I thought the art was excellent.
We're going back to Shane being racist for nationalities. You haven't heard of Letterkenny? It's Canadian. Haven't you heard of all things that are Canadian? I don't know, Shane. Have you heard of everything that's American? Yeah, have you heard of all things Canadian, like Tim Hortons, Letterkenny, and Mike Myers? Those are the three things I can think of off the top of my head.
Adam Sandler's not Canadian.
He's from New York.
Who else? There's a whole group. Jim Carrey.
The earlier guys on Saturday Night Live, John
Candy. Are you talking about the guys from SCTV?
Yeah.
Like John Candy, Eugene Levy, the guy who shrunk his kids.
Oh, Rick Moranis?
Rick Moranis.
Yeah, they're all Canadian.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Ryan Reynolds.
Yes, Ryan Reynolds is not Adam Sandler.
Right.
I'm offended on behalf of people that are unsure of themselves.
Listen, I don't know why Adam Sandler, probably because you said Michael Myers and my brain went to Saturday Night Live. And for some reason, his was the first name that popped to mind. But no. Yeah,
if we could sell tickets to The Way Your Mind Works, we would make a killing. It's just a roller coaster of emotion.
People would never make it out. They just get stuck in there.
They should design the new Fire in the Hole in Silver Dollar City based on The Way You Have a Thought.
Oh, gosh, that's scary. But it might be entertaining. It entertains me. Whether it entertains people at home, I don't know. But
you tell us at inebriatedanalysis@gmail.com.
All of our reviews have been positive except for one. They were mad that we were just vulgar. Like, they were vulgar for vulgar's sake. And I'm like, maybe. But
for those of you who want to leave a negative review with constructive criticism, we take that constructive criticism, because if you've listened to this podcast up to this point, we are being vulgar because it's valid for the book we're reading, talking about how a trans woman would have sex with a robot man. Speaking of which, TJ, what did you think of the art in that scene?
I like the art. I mean, it wasn't entirely unique, but like, I've seen other people kind of emulate that style, but the first time I'd seen it was one of these covers. I'd seen Saga covers before, and it jumped out at me, just the artwork did. And it has this kind of washed out watercolor feel, but it also has a nice crisp movement to it. Like, the action feels action packed, and the relaxing scenes feel very relaxing. It's very emotive. You know, it pulls you in. The art pulls you in.
I wonder, because I've read a few, like a little bit about just the process of Saga and stuff, and it seems to be, and I don't know if this is true for like the way comics are made in general, but it seems to me that Brian K. Vaughan just like gives Fiona Staples the script, and then she draws whatever the fuck she wants. And I don't know if that's 100% true, or again, whether or not that's how just comics work in general.
I would be very interested to see what their process is, because like Marvel was the opposite. You know, the Marvel method is, you know, the artist would draw everything. And then, you know, or like the writers would give like a very generic outline, like, okay, here's the action I want in each of these scenes. Go crazy and draw it however you want to draw it. And then it came back in, and once it was drawn, they put the dialogue in that they want, you know, like.
I've seen some writers are very specific on what they want drawn. I think it's partially up to the writer and, you know, how good they are. But like, what's his face? We've read a few of his comics.
Alan Moore?
Killing Joke? Alan Moore, yeah. He's very specific in his notes. Like, in his, it comes across like a screenplay to a director. It's very much the opposite of what you guys are describing.
Are most of his notes just like, make sure that you...
We talked about how the robot, their emotions go across their face. I thought it was pretty funny during, like, whenever he's laying in bed masturbating, how his his screen, it's like his screen was changing from like porn to porn to porn to porn. Like what, whatever he was imagining sexually is what was on the screen. And it was almost like he was sitting there scrolling through the hub, trying to find the one video that he wanted to watch, you know?
It would have been better if he would have like had tabs open, if he was just flipping back and forth between tabs.
Right.
It was so fucking relatable. But the tabs, that's what we were missing. I guess he's a TV, he's not a computer, but still. Yeah, and it was, I do think that the Robot the Fourth was a little more sexual with his screen than I would have liked, because I would have really liked to see, like, the trauma of battle that he's experienced, that a lot of his problems come from, expressed more. Because there's a scene where he's getting tortured by the Will, or he's getting ready to get killed by the Will, and like the scene from his childhood comes across where his mother is like being a fucking cunt to him. I would have loved to have seen more of that instead of like the one. There was a scene where he was like having a flashback to a battle, but it was just his whole platoon just fucking each other. Like, okay, but like I would have liked if that would have been drawn out more and used more, and now we can't do that because he's dead. So yeah. Maybe happen to Squire, but I don't want to see it on a child. So,
well, the fact that that's what he saw when he was dying, like when he was on the battlefield and was wounded and thought he was dying, his what he saw was his platoon having an orgy, you know, like that. I could see that. Like, I could see somebody visualizing sex in a moment of like agony or depression, or like that's where my mind goes. Like, if I'm having a really shitty day, I'm thinking about sex probably to get my mind off of things.
But it didn't, yeah. I don't know, the way it was depicted, it wasn't like he was doing it to get his mind off of something. It was like, I also couldn't determine whether or not he was actually reliving something that actually happened, or no, if that was just like he integrated like the tragic violence and the horror that he experienced with, you know, a massive orgy with everybody that experienced that with.
No, because he was talking, because like he even said, he's like, these are people that I've never thought were attractive. And right. I've never thought, you know, like,
that's right.
Like, and then he's like, but in my mind, we were all in this giant orgy, you know? So like this guy who thought he was dying, he wasn't reliving his life. He wasn't having a flashback of his life. He was having a flash of, you know, just pure sexual debauchery with the people that he'd spent the most amount of time with recently.
Speaking of orgies.
So I'm sorry, what now? I was trying to segue you back into the art, and then your segue is like, speaking of a whole bunch of people fucking in a pile.
And how can we make that more socially acceptable?
Probably like have less
pineapples for everybody.
Have less men exist. Like, men are the ones that make it creepy and weird.
Yeah, that's my solution.
Speaking of orgies, let's all have one. As someone who doesn't have a partner, I'm not opposed to it, but like, I feel like I'm not bringing anything to the table.
Well, there's two others who have partners that wouldn't be for it, so we're not bringing anything to the table either.
The cast of Pitch Perfect, if I could have an orgy with anyone, would be the cast of Pitch Perfect.
And then it depends on which Pitch Perfect you're talking about, but in the second Pitch Perfect, there's the football player, and then there's the German guy. So
I was talking about the first one with
I was not thinking about any of the males. I was thinking of that shower scene with Andrew
Kendricks and that redhead, and then the psycho blonde chick.
You can't be exclusionatory. We are an all inclusive podcast.
Everybody's got to be there to come too.
Listen, the dudes can be there. Oh, we'll all come. The dudes can be there, but like that doesn't. I'm not picturing them. Like I ain't fucking with the dudes. Like that's not what I'm there for.
We can high five and everything. You know, I'll support you the whole time.
Yeah, that's fine.
I don't know if I need support. I don't know if I want support in that situation. I feel like if I need support, there's other things going on in my life that I don't want to bring to an orgy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we're going to be holding your hips and helping you with your rhythm or anything.
Then why are we even doing it? I don't understand.
The Dutch rudder.
The double Dutch rudder. Like, I'm holding my dick, you're holding your dick. We're not, it's not gay. We're not touching dicks.
For those at home that don't know, the Dutch rudder is whenever you hold your wiener and someone else moves your arm for you.
So it's just masturbation with extra steps, unnecessary extra steps. Like, no. Fuck. There's got to be a way to get back on track. I remember what the fuck I was going to say before orgies came up. The special agent for the Coalition, does he not remind you of fucking Lucifer from Sandman?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, he looks exactly like, you know, in the suit, the blonde hair and everything. He looks like the, like Lucifer, but with like extra bottom wings or whatever.
He's like a smaller version of like Lucifer to me came across as like being bigger and definitely like the, hey, I'm the biggest dick in the room kind of guy. This guy definitely, he seems more smaller and more like, hey, I'm not the biggest dick in the room, but I know how to move.
Anyway, I can't recommend this book fucking enough. As long as you're over the age of 18, very over the age of 18.
Yeah.
Like 25, maybe. It's fucking graphic. And there's a lot of like good violence as well.
I don't know. If I would not promote this book to my kids, as teenagers, but if my daughter came up to me at like 15 or 16 and said, hey, can I read this book? Yeah, I'll let you read the book. Like, I'm not going to promote it to you because you're still young, but like, if you know, I think if you know your kids, like, you know, there's a time where they hit an age where if they can handle a rated R movie, they can handle reading this, you know. And I mean, hell, I'm like, but you're also this, I'm also, and TJ I know is falls in this category too, where people, like, I can remember as a child, and when I say child, I mean we're talking 5, 6, 7 years old, went to the video store and rented Revenge of the Nerds 1 and 2. And dad fucking ripped those on to another home VHS for me. You know, he pirated that shit. And I watched Revenge of the Nerds and Revenge of the Nerds 2 to the point where the VHSs were getting worn out. Like, long before, like, we're talking, yeah, like 6, 7, 8 years old. Long before I ever understood sex or what sex was. But I thought those movies were hilarious. And then the older I got and the more jokes I got, I'm like, how the fuck did my parents let me watch this every week growing up and during my childhood? It's probably why I am so fucking, you know, obsessed with sex, because I grew up on, you know, Nerds and Revenge of the Nerds 2.
That has to, based on having met your parents, that leads me to believe they did not watch that before they let you watch it. Like, there's no way.
No, I don't know. I remember. Now, granted, whenever I was in, you know, a little later, like, you're probably 14, 13, 14, definitely not 15 yet. Dad and I went on a hunting trip, and we were spending the weekend down in Ava, staying in an RV that Dad had at the time. And we stopped at the movie store on the way and rented every Porky's movie. And, you know, like 14 years old, my dad sat and we watched Porky's.
So I get that. Like, my dad definitely showed me Loose Shoes and Kentucky Fried Movie when I was a kid. He also was the person who showed me The Birds when I was 3. Like, we watched The Birds together, so that's why I'm fucking terrified of birds. So perhaps that's not the best, like, example to set. But also, I think there's got to be something there with the idea of, like, it's a boys' trip. Shane's balls have dropped, so we can watch these raunchy movies that I watched growing up. I think, again, the Revenge of the Nerds thing to a toddler is probably where, after toddling is where I would say, hey, maybe your parents just didn't screen it. I know there's definitely stuff. I mean, I've told the story. I don't know if I've told the story in the podcast before, but my mother would not let me. I wanted to get the Bare Naked Ladies album when it came out, when 1 week hit. And I was like, I'm going to get the Bare Naked Ladies CD and I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to learn all the words to 1 week. And then everyone's going to be so impressed because I could chicken to China to Chinese chicken. And my mom wouldn't let me get the album because the band's name was Bare Naked Ladies. And then
it was because of the Boom and MA Babes that make me feel no shame or more shame, whatever.
No, it was because of the band name. They're Canadian even. So, like, she didn't, you know, and then the next week after I'd asked her for that, we went to a thrift store and Hooray for Boobies. Like, there was a Hooray for Boobies CD, the Bloodhound Gang, but it just said Hooray on it and it didn't have the cover. And I got that with no problem. That is a filthy fucking album. That, like, was for a while when they were doing all the subgenres of rock at, like, fucking FYE or Camelot or whatever the fuck we had in town. That was under a section with, like, 3 other bands. It was just called pornography rock.
But, you know, so going back to my original point, like I'm not, this isn't a book that I would let my kids read as kids, but like, you know, if my kids got to be, you know, 14, 15, 16 years old, and I felt at that point in their life that they had experience any kind of adult situations, or I felt they had the maturity level, like, you know, I would allow them to pull it off the shelf, you know, because I would rather my kids pull something like this off my shelf at 14 years old, read it, and ask me questions about it, than to have to feel like they're going to sneak it, you know, sneak around, or you know, not trust me with what they're reading.
I'd rather they sneak it around, and then like I could catch them reading a book under the covers, and just like flip the covers back, and they're just reading a book with a flashlight, and they just call them a fucking nerd for reading a comic book, and then like dunk their head in a toilet or some shit.
Mark's projecting on his kids.
I never got bullied. I never really got bullied or like picked on, because I very early on was just like, I'm just gonna be funny and they'll never pick on me, and then no one will ever like know when I'm actually hurting. So, you know, we all have our problems that we fucking developed. It's cool. Yeah, no, I don't think I would let my kid read this right now because of its graphic nature, although there's definitely things I would want him to pick up from it. And I think as adults that we are, and adults that have done some healing, though not necessarily all the healing that we need, but have gone through things and processed them correctly, you can see the things in this story, like we were talking about, where these characters are very flawed, and you could see them making the bad decisions and know their bad decisions and hate the fact that they're making bad decisions, but understand why they're doing it. But there doesn't seem to be like the follow through of a lesser story would do, where they learn a lesson at the end of it. And I think that where I want my kids to be at this point is I want them to read stories with super flawed characters, but then like have them be able to take the lesson away from that. And I don't think you get lessons taken away from this, and it's not intended to be that. It's not intended to be something where you read it and you're like, oh, thank God everything worked out in the end because they learned how not to fucking violence people.
No, I think a lot of the lessons are definitely implied. And also it's like each lesson, like I would say each lesson that's in this isn't a conclusion. There's a takeaway from within the, like the middle of the story arc, or maybe towards the end of the story arc, but like every little mini arc within this story, when that mini arc ends, there's not a clean cut takeaway lesson. It's, you know, it's the little pieces here and there that are scattered within the story. And then what you can infer at the end of it, you know, but yeah, I could see it's not like it's a fucking Aesop's fable where you get to the end and there's a clear cut lesson.
I can't wait for November 15th. I don't want to follow up with you like necessarily on the podcast, but I definitely want to hear from you guys when you read the next volume, because the next volume also ends on like a really sad note, which I don't know why Brian would do that. Like, hey,
that's
guys.
That's what life is, man. A series of down endings.
Sure, but like, hey, guys. Well, I know you waited. You waited 4 years for this. Like, we took a 4-year hiatus, and there was a global pandemic. So, we're gonna give you some more saga, and then when you get to the end of this volume, we're gonna break your fucking heart like twice. Like in the same panel, two heartbreaks happen. It's fucking it's crazy.
I've had all about as much heartbreak as I can take from this book so far. I mean, I'm going to keep reading it.
Dude, your heart's going to crack in fucking half.
I felt like, what's the fucking kid's name in Neverending Story?
Is it Atreyu?
No, the kid reading the book.
Sebastian.
Yeah, I felt like fucking Sebastian reading this story, because like, you know, in Neverending Story, when something happens, he like yells out just out to the attic that he's reading. He's like, no, don't do it, or you know, whatever. Like when fucking Isabel died, like I verbally went, no. like I was, yeah, it hit like that. I was like, no, fucking, I like this fucking alt skater chick ghost nanny, like she's cool, why are you gonna fucking get rid of her? And the dog, same thing with the dog. When the dog died, I went, no, not the dog. If you kill that fucking cat, I'm gonna be pissed.
Yeah, I didn't really give a fuck about the dog because they had recently introduced the dog. But yeah, if Lion Cat would, like when Lion Cat gets fucked up in the eye, I was like, if they kill this fucking cat, we're gonna have problems.
Oh yeah, yeah. I felt the same. I was glad to see the eye recovered later on. Spoilers, the eye gets better.
I mean, I guess it's not spoiler at this point. That's why up at the top,
I was being ironic.
Hey, everybody, we're going to spoil some shit. And then I just fucking dropped the take Marco, which is frustrating because for the whole time I was reading, the compendium, I put a T in his name, and then his name was Mardo. Okay. And as I was reading it, I was like, oh, this is the character I identify with. And it's fucking great that I identified with this character because, like, it's one of the first male characters I've identified with out of all the shit that we've read because, like, he's just, like, a soft, like, not alpha, not toxic masculinity, like, character. He's just like, loves everybody, wants to take care of everybody, and hates violence and all that shit. And then I realized his name was Mark O. I'm like, come on, man. Like, pick a more – if you're going to fucking attach yourself to a character, don't attach your the character whose name is just yours with a fucking O. Like, don't latch on to Shano, the magician, in the next book we read.
Unless he's really cool.
I don't know. Like, yeah, if we can find a book with a character named Shano that's cool as fuck, I'll latch on to that.
We got some interesting books on the docket. So who knows?
Yeah. What all? I mean, I've looked at it recently, but Mark, tell us what we don't have to go in order. So you know, if you've been listening a while now, you know we've got an order, but you know sometimes that order gets shaken up a little bit. Tell our listeners what some of our upcoming episodes are.
So, our next podcast that we release will be The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula Le Guin, which I'm very excited about. Multiple people.
I just checked out that audiobook. I've never heard of this book. So, like, what's it about?
This is teaching.
Like, okay, idea. Is it sci-fi? Is it fantasy?
I thought that was you that put it on there.
I did. I just liked her other books I've read, but I don't know. I just know this is one of her higher rated books.
All right, so definitely tune in next time because whatever this book we're going into, The Left Hand of Darkness, we're all going in completely blind. We don't know what to expect. We don't know what it's about. We just know TJ liked one of her other books.
Her trilogy.
All I know is a Wizard of Earthsea. Wizard of Earthsea. Is this the first one?
No. She wrote The Wizard of Earthsea, and I really like that trilogy, so I wanted to read this.
Okay.
I've heard good things about the Earthsea trilogy, but I never read it.
I know this author was recommended to me by a friend in response to me hating all of the ways women were depicted in everything else we've read. So I'm very excited about that. And then we're reading Something is Killing the Children, and I'm going to do my best to stop at the first fucking volume.
You don't have to.
Really got to stop with this. I've
read them all.
I've read through volume 7. I just want to do a refresher of the first and second volume before we record it.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see what happens there. And then for our Christmas episode in like a week and or a month and a half from when this is released, our Christmas episode is going to be A Christmas Carol 2: Rise of the Juggernauts. So pretty excited about that.
Awesome.
You know, cuz I mean, honestly, like The Muppet Christmas Carol, pretty solid story. However, as I was watching The Muppet Christmas Carol with Michael Caine, all I could think about was, what if there were fucking robots? So, I don't actually know if the juggernauts in this aforementioned book are robots or not, but let's see what happens.
I have no idea what that is. Like, you say juggernauts, and I just think of, I'm the juggernaut, bitch.
Yep, I knew that was immediately going to happen.
Yeah, but like, what is Rise of the Juggernauts? Like, is this within another fictional world, or like, is it a fictional setting? Is it a standalone thing?
I have absolutely no idea. I Googled.
Join us in December and find out for yourself.
With that being said, everyone, do we have any final thoughts on Saga until we read it again in November? Oh my God, hold on. Am I stupid?
Yeah, man.
Stupid person. Hold
on. Look at that robot dick.
Wait, hold on. Stop showing the robot dick. Guys, okay. So we're going to break the fourth wall, which is not Shane just showing just the
look at the robot jacking off.
All right, everyone, pay attention. So that was our podcast on Saga. We loved it. Peace. Pieces and greases. That's what the kids say, right? Pieces and greases. I heard that on a TikTok. I don't know.
And robot wieners.
God damn it.